A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on July 19, 1998, in the series, Can I Honestly Believe?, entitled, Atheism. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 43, verses 18 through 19, Psalm 137, verse 4, and Acts 17, verses 22 through 28. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
I continue this week a series that I began last week when we inaugurated a series of summer sermons on the overall theme, Can I Honestly Believe?, which is an attempt to look at the same old questions and to say, is that which we affirm also consistent with that which we know in the exercise of our minds in regard to the whole of reality? Is there a consistency between the faith structures that we hold and the knowledge that we have of our world, of our lives? If that isn't true, there's a cognitive dissonance. And then religion becomes a compartment of our lives. We come into a sanctuary on Sunday morning, but it isn't that which illumines our total human experience. And ideally, it ought to do that. Ideally, our religious faith and devotion ought to be the expression of the deep wells of our being that is consistent with who we are and what we know and how we live. And so we're going back to visit some of the old fundamental questions once again. And this morning to talk about God. To talk about God under the subject A-theism. Question mark. And the most important matter for you to understand as we begin is that A-theism is not atheism. Atheism is a belief that there is no God. A-theism, question mark, raises a question about that conception of God known as theism, or a theistic conception of God. Now, what is that? Well, it's everything you've ever known, everything you've ever been taught, everything you've taught. It is the conception that informs you when you pray, when you sing hymns, when you do liturgy, because theism is the most common conception of God in the whole Western culture, including Judaism and Christianity and Islam. Theism as a conception of God is so common that we speak of theism as identical with faith in a God. But that's not true. And that's what I want to say this morning. And if I can get that through to you this morning, we will have accomplished something. Last week I asked you, do I need religion? And I said, no. I'm not going to claim that. But I do claim there is a fuller, richer experience of being human if it includes God, worship, devotion, etc. This morning, I want to go on with what I was trying to say last week when I said that religion is a human, creative, imaginative construct. Religion is a human, imaginative, creative construct. You'll not hear that from many pulpits. And understandably so. If too many people get too loose with this whole matter of religion, there won't be enough jobs to go around. And it's detrimental to my profession. But since I'm almost old enough to retire, I can be honest. And I can tell you that religion didn't fall out of heaven. Our human religions are not the product of revelation from heaven. They are human, creative, imaginative responses to the inbreaking of that ultimate mystery that we speak of as God. Now, when we took a vote at the end of last Sunday, you did agree that I was right on that. You did vote, didn't you? You have to be careful, because if you grant me some of these things, before you know it, I'll have you. You see? I'm setting you up. Because if religion, that is institutional religion, that is any kind of religion that involves doctrinal beliefs, cultic forms of worship, ethical modes of human living, any kind of religion is a human response to the inbreaking from beyond of the mystery. That's a wonderfully liberating idea. Because then I can acknowledge that my human religion, with its forms of belief, its forms of worship, its manner of life, I can grant from the beginning that it will be laced with error, misconceptions here and there, that it is sometimes fruitful and profitable and sometimes less than that. I don't have to defend my religion. The world is full of religion being defended. Because the claim is that the religion fell out of heaven. And therefore, if there's something wrong with the religion, there's something wrong with heaven. There's something wrong with God. Not so. God can't help the kinds of religions we create. God is not into religion. God is into breaking through to us to say, be still and know that I am God. As the prophet said in a near context of the Isaiah passage, I birthed you, I've borne you, and to your last days I'll carry you. All of its symbolic language that points to that kind of security that is craved by the human heart. But how we construct, how we concoct our human religions, that is not God's problem, although it can create a real problem for God sometimes, I think. Human, creative, imaginative construct. Now, if that is true, then of course, right at the core is our conception of God. And what I'm going to claim this morning is that we have a very imperfect conception of God. Necessarily so, because the mystery that is God is a mystery that leaves us dumb. I could have brought you a marvelous quotation from St. Augustine, who said, I used to speak about you until I experienced you, and then I found to experience you I was unable to speak about you. God, I use the word breaks through or manifests, and we respond. Moses responds, and we get the whole liberation movement of the slaves out of Egypt, and we get the nation Israel and that founding experience in the Exodus. Jesus comes along, and Jesus, the Jews' conception of the intimacy relationship with God, becomes very threatening indeed. Paul, the Jew, experiencing Jesus, having this breakthrough, this manifestation, Paul tries to give expression to God. Mars Hill, he borrows from the Stoic philosophers of Greek culture, and actually, in a way, a conception of things much closer to a modern conception than the theistic conception, which basically he did hold. In God we live and move and have our being. We are God's offspring. But the whole human story is an ongoing attempt to bring some meaning, to bring to expression that reality that always eludes us. And I say that that's a liberating idea, because I don't have to defend it. I don't have to claim that it's given once for all. And I don't have to panic when the major configuration of things begins to move off in another direction. And that's really what I'm talking about this morning. Atheism, signaling that at our time, in our world, with our knowledge of reality and of the human person and human society and human developmental history, that the most classic bedrock conception of God is challenged and has been simply written off by many, many, many of our contemporaries. We don't have any sense of that, really, in this area. And we live in a nation that is peculiarly religious. We live in a nation where there are mega churches that are flourishing, but also a nation in which the main line is deeply in trouble, trying to hold on and survive. But folks like us don't really, I think, have much chance to realize the degree to which classic biblical Christian conceptions are in trouble. Now, I want to say that's okay. God will not go down the tubes when the conception of God in theistic terms is shown to be no longer compelling. Well, what is that theistic conception of God? Let me read you a couple definitions. From the Oxford Dictionary, theism is a belief in one God as creator and supreme ruler of the universe. Isn't that what you always have believed? Or the Encyclopedia Britannica, theism is the view that all limited or finite things are dependent in some way on one supreme or ultimate reality, which one may also speak of in personal terms. Or another, theism holds that God is something like a person without a body who is eternal, free, able to do anything, knows everything, is perfectly good, is the proper object of human worship and obedience, the creator and sustainer of the universe. In his book, Why Christianity Must Change or Die, Bishop John Shelby Spong writes of theism that it is the belief in an external, personal, supernatural, and potentially invasive being. Marcus Borg, in his The God We Never Knew, speaks about the image of God in the Hebrew Scriptures as that God enthroned above the heavens, that God who is ruler, who is sovereign, who is king, and even in the Hebrew Scriptures, Father. But that idea of a supreme being with all of the apparatus of supernaturalism, so that this world and our lives are over against that being. Now, classically in our theological tradition, we also spoke about that transcendent being out there also touching us in here, so that God was also immanent. But the immanence of God in our traditional classical understanding of things was never realized very deeply. Rather, God was that figure out there, ruling, controlling, directing, guiding, bringing everything to its consummation. The supreme being. That, says Spong, has had its day. I want to say to you here, it hasn't had its day here. And I want to be very clear that if it's working for you, keep working it. There is no one that needs to move the mental furniture of one's religious construct around just because they happen to be in a congregation whose pastor is a bit strange in probing the outer edges of theological esoterics. Don't change anything that works, because religion is that human imaginative, creative response to the God beyond our gods, the ultimate mystery of things. And that response that is meaningful for you, deepening your humanity and enriching your life, is just fine. But Christ Community is a place where we do think around the edges. And this summer I'm trying to think as clearly and simply as I can about these ultimate matters. And so I'm simply telling you that we are a part of a massive shift in the broader ranges of Western culture, a massive shift in the understanding of God. Many of our contemporaries have just turned off from God. So they have moved into atheism. And if you chart the modern period, you went from an orthodox view of God as that supreme other up there, potentially evasive, the episodic God who moves in and out of creation, to deism in England at the time of our founding of this nation. Deism was kind of a halfway house. The God who created it all, wound it up like a clock, now is letting it tick off, but doesn't really have an intimate relationship. There was the orthodox conception. Deism was a step removed. And deism was really a halfway house to atheism, where we didn't really even need the hypothesis of a God. And I'm trying to say this morning that if we want to avoid eventually down the road, we or our children or our children's children, if we want to avoid that slide into atheism, the denial of God, then it is incumbent upon us to think, and to think hard, about the nature of God that we've experienced and how to bring that to expression. I don't know how to do it. But oftentimes we know when something isn't working before we know how to fix it. Karen Armstrong, in her lecture, The Future of God, which I heard a year and a half ago, when she was at the Diocese of Bishop Spong, talked about that cognitive darkness. Quoting the poet Keats, waiting for the poem to write itself. As she said, you don't, again, quoting the poet doesn't sit down and just write the poem. The poet waits in the darkness until the muse speaks, until the poem writes itself. You don't call a committee and write a poem. You don't call a committee and write a creed. You wait with openness. You wait in expectation for the idea, for the vision to emerge. And I do believe that that is where we are, globally speaking, today. The great religions of the world are in dialogue with one another. The West has become largely secular in its greater expression. And it is a time of waiting, I think, in the darkness for God to reveal God's self. Greg Martin sang Psalm 120, 137. Judah was in exile and they said, sing us, give us a little Jewish song. They said, how can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? We take the Hebrew scriptures seriously, but we ought to recognize that they're very, very human. This document is very, very human. If you would go on to read those verses that beyond those verses that were sung for us, how can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? You'd come to the last verse where all of the anger and hostility of the psalmist is expressed when he prays to God to dash their little ones against a rock. Well, it gives you, you know, it gives you goosebumps. It's chilling. The God of Israel in that instance was a tribal God. That tribal God couldn't move into exile, so they were godless. And they couldn't sing their Lord's, their God's song in that situation. But then there arose a prophetic voice that said, comfort ye my people, says your God. I am the Creator God. I created a way through the sea. The horse and chariot were overcome. Now, don't look back, for behold, I am doing a new thing. Israel, Judah, had to gain a bigger conception of their God. A God who could accompany them and indeed be with them in exile and indeed still be God to them in exile. God who would ultimately bring them home. And Paul, how could he say God in the face of Jesus Christ and Mars Hill in Athens? That was his problem. That was his challenge. That was his struggle. He quotes their poets. There's some truth there. Paul is standing in the Acropolis. He's standing in the center of human learning, trying to bring expression to that which had encountered him. And that which had encountered him was the God of Israel, as Israel had conceived God. But now that God, given a different spin, Because now seen through the limbs of Jesus Christ. And for Paul, it was still quite a simple matter. He said, God, who arranged the boundaries where people are and all that stuff. Kind of a small project. But he was reaching and stretching to bring to expression a bigger view of God. And that's what we're about as well. Say, well, what about the revelation of God? Yes, that's what I mean when I'm talking about the breaking in or the manifestation. I don't deny that God reveals God's self, but there's a problem with revelation. Everyone who has one thinks it's the last word. And then they build the structure and absolutize it, trying to freeze the moment and perpetuate it on forever. So that there's a block to any further manifestation, any new experience. We can't afford that anymore. Our world is exploding. The growth in knowledge and understanding is exponential. It's breaking out all over. And the mood of the church in the main line, by and large, is to hold on and to survive and to nail down and to reimagine yesterday. I guess the big thing I'd say to you is wait in the darkness. What works? Work. And where there's cognitive dissonance, live with it. Keep thinking about it. And eventually, the new will emerge. The idea will show itself. And when it shows itself, we'll recognize how weak and paltry is our present institutional Christian religious form and structure. Because when the new emerges, when we learn to say God in a new way, it will sweep all before it. Someone has said there is no military might that compares to an idea whose time has come. And so we're out testing ideas, confident in the meantime that we can rest in that ultimate mystery, the God beyond our God.